This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Free for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. As football fans, we often pride ourselves on knowing everything, from which substitution can turn the game around to the quickest route home to beat the crowds. However, when it comes to discussing feelings with our friends, we might not always feel as confident. That's why we're here to equip you with the right tools so you can reach out to those who can help. If your mates are struggling, let them know that the Samaritans are free to call on 116 123. That's 116 123. They are there to listen without judgment or pressure, 24/7, 365 days of the year. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
Johnson plugs it in for Aidan Flynn! They've done it!
Gregory, he's in the box, tries to screw him, is it going to be there?
Yes!
Oh my word! Come it's on!
In! You're listening to the number one pod for Sheffield Wednesday. This is the Wednesday Till I Die podcast.
Just when you think it's all over, they go and do that. The gap down to 4 points and survival in the championship is very much back on for at least a week anyway. Hello and welcome to the Wednesday Till I Die podcast. I'm James Mappin. Alongside me this evening is Matt to go through the 2-0 win away at Millwall. Matt, first of all, how are you, mate? You all right?
Yeah, not too bad, James. A little worse for wear today, but aside from that, all good.
Yeah, we'll get straight into that and the reason why you're feeling a little bit worse for wear. You were in London yesterday. Been to the Den before, Matt?
A long time ago. I think it was around 2013. But I will be honest, it was a Tuesday night and I didn't experience all the delights that London Bridge and all its bars had to offer, which I gave it a good kick yesterday.
Yeah. Do you know what? I've never been to the Den either, but just it looks a tidy ground, to be fair. Certainly three sides are the same. I think the away end looks a little bit different to the other three. But, you know, it looks quite a tidy little ground as far as grounds come, and you know, it's not like a bowl like all these boring ones anymore. It looks quite compact and all right. I mean, I wouldn't like to play there, but no, as far as the ground looks, it's not too bad, is it?
Outside of it, it's not anything particularly pleasing on the eye. It is, if you were to just say, I need a football stadium here, that is exactly what it looks like outside. In terms of actual setup inside, I think it's one of the better away ends that you go to. It's got a big, massive, like kind of like open bit at the back, which is open throughout the game and before the game. So you don't get kind of like that huge congestion on sort of like a concourse. You've got bars both inside and outside. It did help that it went chucking it down yesterday. But it was, yeah, when you get up into the stand as well, you don't have to just go into like a lower tier and an upper tier. Everything's kind of like starts off at ground level and you've got tiers going up into the lower tier immediately in front of you, and then a couple of stairs up to the top. So it is, you do get all 3,000 of us who were down there yesterday, you do get everybody all mixing, which makes half time a lot of fun.
Yeah, just on that as well, the travelling support, I mean, I've been to a few getaway games this season. You've been to what seems like most, if not all. Just we travel in numbers, and we always travel in numbers anyway, but this season more than anything. I mean, I know we're going to talk about a rare away win, what, third one of the season so far, but, you know, it is amazing, isn't it, how many people and, you know, that continue to turn up Tuesday night, Saturday, wherever it is, you know, Plymouth, obviously down in London this weekend and everything. And, you know, it's fantastic to see, and it, because not many clubs have got that sort of support, even when they're winning, let alone when they're getting beat every week.
Yeah, I think that's it, isn't it? It's when the going gets tough. I think one of the things that we can always pride ourselves on as Wednesday fans is no matter how shit the football is, you'll always still have all of us lot all turn up and still enjoy not only a day out, but also we'll still back a team and we'll turn up in the numbers. It was just really nice to have something to shout about walking away from there yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, before we get on to Millwall and the starting lineup and everything else that came with it, did you see that clip of Josh Windass? Obviously, we were on some sort of podcast, weren't we? I think you were doing a live stream or a watch-along for the City and Chelsea game, I think it was. And, you know, he got asked what Cisco Munoz was like, and he replied to say, he got 2 points in 10 games. It were brilliant. And I just thought that is just fantastic the way... I mean, my delivery there was not quite as good as what Josh Windass's was when he said it. But yeah, fantastic. I mean, what do you think to that? You know, injured, but off doing a podcast. Do you not really bothered about that? Or should he have been there in the stands at Millwall, you know, living it like everyone else?
I've got no problem with him doing it personally. He's clearly not in and around the team. He's not been asked to travel. I quite like the idea of players, and you do see a different side to him. Like I watched this morning when I had an out to do and was trying to nurse hangover off. I had nothing to do other than to listen to the full 2 hours back of it. So just stuck an earphone in. There's some really interesting little snippets from there. He talks about the Peterborough game. Inevitably, somebody sends a question to him and he talks about the Peterborough game and he's talking about the atmosphere there. And he claims that it was, you know, it's the best comeback ever in the history of sport. He says it's better than the Liverpool Barcelona one. And he talks about when the second goal comes in. I won't spoil it for anybody, but there's a quote in there from Barry Bannon that is absolutely gold, which I would really encourage anybody to go and have a listen back to.
I think he also mentions that the atmosphere is better than the Old Firm as well, didn't he? Which I think he's got a bit of stick for, which, yeah. I mean, for me, yeah, do whatever you want. Like, you know, if you're not in the squad, you know, I don't think Josh Windass is that kind of influential person in the dressing room. You know, no disrespect to him, but I don't think he'll even say that himself. Now, if it was kind of a Will Volks or someone like that, I think he's a bit of a motivator. Maybe you do want him around and everything else, but nah, do whatever you want. It's funny, someone tweeted him and said that they saw him driving a Range Rover or something, and he's like, that's funny that, because I'm in London and I went on the train. So yeah, what did he say? Nice story, bro. I thought that was quite...
I don't get people getting so worked up about that type of stuff. I think, as I say, I think it's really good to hear players doing something that's outside of sort of like that mainstream media, because, yeah, he probably could have gone down and done a co-commentary on the game yesterday for Radio Sheffield. But I actually think it's really interesting because he's around, he's good mates with one of the lads who's on that Pitchside podcast, Tom Garrett. And it's quite interesting to hear him just chat for 2 hours just about not just Wednesday related stuff, but also just football in general.
Yeah.
And you get a real side for kind of like his personality, because that is, I mean, on the pitch, I do think he's a good player for us, but I do think he spends a lot of time on the treatment table, and the nature of the situation that we're in, that makes it difficult for us. But I also do think that he's one of the, you know, like the interesting characters within our dressing room in terms of football, and he's never afraid to speak his mind. You don't get the sense that he's been media trained to within an inch of his life, and whenever you do get kind of like anything from him, and it is rare, it is always worth a listen. He does come across, in my opinion anyway, he comes across as quite a decent lad you'd want to sit down and have a conversation with.
Just on that with injuries, I feel he's going to be another Massimo Luongo in what, I mean, like, we might not keep hold of him because of his injury record. And he'll go to some other club, wherever that may be, it'll be one of their fan favourites, and he'll be banging him in left, right and centre, and he'll not have an injury for the rest of his career. I don't know if Mass has picked up another injury, but he's certainly been playing well for Ipswich, and it's like, it's one of those, isn't it, where you look at it and you're going to think, I think I mentioned on the debate show, I think he plays two and then misses one. Obviously, that's if all the games that he's missed is down to injury. I'm not too sure if it is, but I would probably guess that it is, because Windass plays when he's fit, basically. And yeah, you look at that and you think, can I afford to pay him what he's on when I can get this player here that's never been injured? And then, yeah, lo and behold, you know, the player that you released then goes on to not have an injury. So it's because someone is going to always take a punt on a Josh Windass, but yeah, I agree. Have you listened to the one that Gary Lineker does with Micah Richards and Alan Shearer, the podcast?
Is it the
Rest Is Football?
That's the one. Yeah, I've listened to snippets of that. It's not one that's in my... this sounds horrendously cringe. It's not one that's in my podcast rotation, I'll be honest with you.
It is a great one. They mention about, you know, I think it's Micah Richards, you know, you said about not being media trained, and they said, like, you know, why do they even ask you these questions? Because they know what we're going to say is, well, we're always looking forward to the next game, taking one game at a time. And Micah Richards is like, it's fucking bullshit. Like, you are not thinking about, you know, Luton away on Saturday. You're thinking a Champions League Tuesday night quarter final. He's like, gloves are off, and they are. I mean, even Gary Lineker as well, he's, you know, you think being on the BBC, he's very much, you know, straight down the middle, and I think he's gone a bit down the garden path a little bit, and he's speaking his mind, which is good. Anyway, let's talk about Millwall then. Everyone don't want to listen to Gary Lineker and everything else. They want to hear what our thoughts are on the 2-0 win against Millwall. Before we talk about the lineup and stuff, what did you think before the game? Because for me, and I said it to you just before, it could have been 4-0 to us, 4-0 to them. It could have been a boring 0-0, or it could have been a 4-4 with both teams just, you know, going blow for blow. I could not call this one bit.
No, I agree. It was a game that was beforehand absolutely impossible to call. On paper, everything looked like it was pointing in the right direction for us to go and get a result. I mean, we were all speaking last week over a variety of different sort of like platforms about how difficult it was going to be, and that it was a must win, and that it was a six-pointer. But equally, you could have seen us going down there and putting in a similar performance to what we have done at times this season, where, you know, they score early and we just sort of roll over. I mean, it's less than, what, a couple of weeks ago since Huddersfield, who were in a similar position to them when we played them. And it could have been absolutely anything. As it turned out, I'm very pleased that it wasn't. But yeah, it could have been absolutely anything before the game. I was heading down hopeful, I will be honest, to Millwall yesterday, but it was something that I was thinking. I am starting to get nervous now about games, rather than midway through the season when you're having a bit of a laugh with it. Even if it is still terrible, you're still thinking, nah, well, there's still enough time. It is now, if we had no one yesterday, you're thinking, nah, this is, you are now running out of time. This is potentially nailing the coffin. And if the, you know, if it's not that, it's going to take hell of a run to get out of it.
Yeah, I thought exactly the same, to be fair. And you've took the words out of my mouth. Nailing the coffin would have been it, a defeat. It was almost one of them. I was hoping that Millwall were going to try and play to not lose, and then we would be going for the win, in the, you know, a draw for them, although not great, because they'd be looking to beat us, you know, it wouldn't be the end of the world, because the team that's chasing him, well, all right, one of them is QPR, which are, you know, they are a little bit closer than what we are, but we are a team that's chasing, and a defeat would be, you know, almost catastrophic. So I was hoping that they would be a bit more cagey, and we could really go for it. But, you know, we'll come on to, you know, the game in a second. But starting lineup, two changes, Masaba and Palmer both came in. Gassama and Kadamatri were the two that made way. So it was Beadle in goal, Valentin, Palmer, Ehekwa, Bernard and Johnson, Paveda, Volks, Bannon and Masaba, and Ugbo up front. In terms of the formation, I haven't got a clue. I've got written down here 5-4-1, 3-4-3. I've seen some people say it were more like a 4-4-2, 4-4-1-1. It could have been literally anything, couldn't it, really? I mean, I was pretty certain that it was a back five, but you've said to me that it's not. And I think Tom, he's done some analysis with the average positions, and that certainly doesn't look like a back five either. I've no idea. It worked though, didn't it?
Yeah, 100%. I said to you, obviously, before we started, I mean, it got to 10 past two, and normally I'm quite religious with 2 o'clock and like checking my phone for all the rest of it. I was at 9 beers deep by that point, and looked at my phone and just went,
You didn't tell me that before I invited you to come onto the podcast.
No, as I say, I was struggling yesterday. And it got to 10 past two and I turned around. I got games with my dad and I just turned around to him and just went, oh shit, team news is out. And then scrolled down and was like, yeah, that looks absolutely fine. In retrospect of it, it was, I thought he was really smart with his team selection yesterday, Danny Roll. I think that game was perfect for Will Volks. I was critical of his selection on Tuesday. I thought for large parts of the game on Tuesday, it passed him by and he was chasing shadows a lot. I thought it was perfect for him yesterday. And I think the the changes that he made made us a lot more robust and difficult to beat away from home. And arguably, I mean, Gassama coming out, although disappointed because he has been on a good run of form, I thought when he come off on Tuesday night against Leicester, he looked absolutely shattered. And it was 100% the right call to bring him out. He's still a young kid. I mean, we're kind of seeing that a little bit with, I suppose, Cadamartri at the minute, who's in and out of the team with niggling injuries. Nothing really too serious, but those niggling injuries. I thought it was the right call for the starting lineup to be the way it was. In terms of formation, I think it was, I'll be kind, I think it was flexible. I personally thought it was a flat back three with two wing backs. And then you would have Poveda and Masaba drop in to sort of like help out that midfield when we were out of possession. And then when we were in possession and we'd get the ball, you'd see Poveda and Masaba dart straight towards like wider positions. And then when we started to get into a bit of a rhythm, you'd then see a bit more movement. But yeah, I agree with you. From a stands position, I couldn't tell you. And I think kind of like statistics, data, fans' reaction, whether they're at the game or not, can all tell you as well. It was hard to work out.
Do you know what as well? One positive I'm thinking of is if we can't work out what's happening, then, I mean, I suppose the opposition aren't going to have a clue either, which surely has got to be a good thing. I mean, at least we're not predictable in the way that we're going to line up, which, you know, is perhaps going to help. Yeah, I was happy with the lineup, to be fair. I always like to see Cadamartri start. I always like, you know, he's, you know, one of our own and you want to see him do well and everything. Obviously, he's come out and said he had a bit of a niggly injury, which, you know, we cannot take risks at all at this stage, you know, whilst it's kind of, you know, on the balancing edge, you know, in terms of like, you know, survival and not, you know, having a striker out. Although, right, he's been blowing cold more than hot in terms of goal scoring, but I do think he does bring a lot. You know, when you look at the goal that Ugbo scored against Birmingham, you know, Cad's played a massive part in that game. So I do think he is influential, you know, despite him scoring. So yeah, I would like to see him, but, you know, if he has got an injury, like I said, fair enough. Ugbo as well, you know, he obviously scored another goal, didn't he, yesterday? So he's the in-form striker now. I do need to apologise again, I suppose, because I did say he's not going to get us those 10 goals. Well, he's... He's 30% of the way there, and there is still, you know, 13, 14 games left of the season. So he might be that person to get 10 goals, and I might be eating me hat in terms of that comment.
He's a really interesting player, isn't he? I mean, we'll get onto the game obviously in a minute, but he's such an interesting player because he goes for large spells of the game, you don't notice him. But then in those crucial moments where you need a forward inside the width of the goal, he seems to be there and give himself a lot of chances. And I mean, even before, obviously, he started putting the ball in the back of the net, he would still have at least one chance a game in the ones that he played before. And I mean, he was unlucky with, obviously, the efforts that come off the post and all the rest of it. But yeah, I can understand why Cardiff fans were unsure on him, because I suppose if he goes through a run of not scoring for a while in your team, you are kind of sat there thinking, what? I don't know what you're offering, really.
Yeah. I think he had a great run at the start of the season, scored against us, of course. I think he scored 3 in 5, I want to say, and then kind of didn't score since, really, until he scored for us. I saw a stat as well which said that 2/3 of his goals that he scores, he ends up in the back of the net, which I thought quite funny. And then I think I think his average, you know, for his goals, distance away from the goal is probably about half a yard, because he is, you know, two of the goals that he scored were literally just poking it in the net. But as you've mentioned, you need someone there to poke those into the net. You know, there's no good. How many times have you seen the ball flash across the, you know, the face of goal, and you think, fucking hell, just gamble and just get on the end of it. But, you know, maybe he's going to be that person that's going to do that. Before we kind of drill into more, you know, first half, second half, and some of the goals that we scored, I mean, what a win. Like, how big, Matt, is that win in the context of this season and survival? Because it feels like there's been 6-pointers, like, literally every single week.
Yeah, I think away from home as well, it's crucial. It's our third away win from home all season. I mean, that tells you everything that you need to know. And if you are going to start winning away from home, now is the time to do it. Even if you just chuck a couple in there between now and the end of the season, that is more than we've had for large spells of it. you mix that in with some decent home form, that gives us a more than fighting chance of staying up. I mean, I've been saying it since October. It's a huge win, as long as we are still in touch with around come April time, going into that kind of like run at that little block of fixtures around Easter. I'm more than happy. Wouldn't it be great if we could, you know, just, I mean, the next four games, we beat everybody 3-0 and climb ourselves out of that relegation zone. We're all on the beach by mid-April. But the reality is that that's not Sheffield Wednesday, and that's definitely not how this season has gone. No. In terms of yesterday, the result, it was a huge win, because it's dragged more teams in and around us now as well. What was it, a couple of weeks ago when we played Huddersfield and we were coming away from that game and the gap was, what, 8 points to safety?
Yeah.
We're now 8 points from, I think it's Plymouth in 15th, which is, you know, that gives you a real good chance of dragging other teams. If you're not going to drag yourself out of the situation, bring everybody else with you, so that if you are there and you do kind of like put a run together, there are a number of teams who are also could potentially slip into that bottom three, and it's not, you're not just relying on, oh well, we've got one team we're aiming for, but we're still below another, so you know you're needing sort of snookers.
Yeah, I think I looked and I don't think it finished like this. I think Birmingham scored a fairly late goal to win, but at one point, fairly late on, I think there was only us and QPR that were not losing out of from 12 downwards. I think Birmingham wouldn't, obviously Plymouth lost in the lunchtime kickoff as well. So it was one of those that for once we've won and we have kind of caught 3 points on loads. And what you generally find, obviously last two seasons when you're in League One, you're winning every single game, you draw, and you feel it does feel like a defeat because everyone else has won and they've, you know, taken 2 points off you. I find at the bottom, when you look, there's a lot of red L's at the bottom, you know, in terms of how many games that teams have lost. There isn't many green W's, do you know what I mean? So if you can get one of them wins that are kind of unexpected, all right, beating Millwall is not unexpected. What I mean in terms of not many teams do win down there, you can kind of catch those 3 points on them teams ahead of you. And, you know, I mean, Birmingham have just proved that, put two wins together. I mean, they lost against us, they've won the next two, and they've shot up to 15th and, you know, 6 points clear of safety, and they were well in the mire after we beat them. So it just does show that a few wins and you can certainly shoot up there. I mean, you were there, Matt. The team at the end coming to the away supporters and everything. You see that togetherness, and you see, you know, Danny Rill at the end as well, coming over and fist pumping to the crowd. Like, you want to see that, don't you? It looks like they are together. I know I mentioned after the Huddersfield game, they looked far from that. They looked, a well beaten team. But it looks, you know, when things are going well, they do look like they are all pulling in that same direction, don't they?
Yeah, I mentioned it on Wednesday night on the debate show, in terms of after Leicester on Tuesday. Every single one of the players who had played, whether they were a sub, whether they were an unused sub, coach and staff, they all came over and stood in front of the away end and just listened to us just sing at them for about 2-3 minutes. There wasn't much in the way of applause. It was just players standing there and just kind of like watching it. And it's rare you see that in English football. You see that a lot in kind of like on the continent in terms of Germany and places like that. You do see that a lot. Players go up to like a home end or an away end and kind of take what's sort of given to them. And yesterday I think it was about the last 30 seconds of the game where Gassama wins a free kick on the edge of the area. It was last action of the game. He goes down, ref blows for a free kick. He springs himself up and he like bolts up, jumps up in front of the away end. He's throwing his hands up, trying to get everybody involved in it. And you're just thinking, hang on, this is a side that are all pulling in the same direction, that know how important this game was, that know how important the result was. And you see that after. I mean, I'll be honest, my head would have fallen off if I was a Millwall fan yesterday watching a team in 23rd doing four cheers from an away end with everybody throwing their arms up. My head would have come clean off yesterday if that had happened. But and then the manager coming over 5 minutes later and doing exactly the same as well. I'm like, oh my word, no worse feeling as a home fan that there must be.
To be fair, I think they'd all gone by that point. Yeah, judging by how it pretty much emptied when the second goal went in, I don't think many were staying right till the end. If they did, I mean, I stayed till the end in the Huddersfield game. So maybe the Millwall are a sadistic bunch as well. You never know. But yeah, like Matt, can we do it? Can we stay up?
$1 million question, in it. Can we? Yes. Will we? I'm undecided, but the only reason I'm undecided is nothing to do with the coaching staff. It's because of the hole we've put ourselves into.
Everyone said these next three games are massive. You know, you look, we've got Bristol City on Saturday. I know we're kind of skipping ahead a little bit. Bristol City on Saturday, and it's a trip to Rotherham, which is a free hit for them. That is, you know, some Rotherham fans will probably say that they'd rather beat us and get relegated than stay up. And it looks like they're not going to stay up this season. And then it's Plymouth as well, who you've mentioned there, what, 8 points away. They could be a lot closer by then. So them three games are pivotal, aren't they? And it is like I said, it is a $1 million question. You want to hope that we can do it, but you know, it was only midweek where we're thinking a defeat. You know, we're talking about a defeat would be the final nail in the coffin. We win and we're saying we can stay up. Like,
it's ridiculous, isn't it? It's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, let's be honest, call a spade a spade. Rotherham are dead and buried. Their biggest game of the season now that is left for them is the last game of the season and us. That is their two biggest games of the season. They are gone. They are well adrift of everything. There is no way that they are coming back from that. I mean, Rotherham fans are more than welcome to clip this if it comes back to bite me in the arse. That's fine. But I just can't see that happening. Bristol City at home. This is very fence-sitting. I would take a draw now. I would take a draw if you'd offered it to me. If, you know, we go to Rotherham and we give it a good go, because then, I mean, they're not going to roll over Rotherham in that particular game. I haven't seen much of them this year, but it seems like that they are in most of their games, at least for a spell. And then, much like ourselves, they get a goal and they seem to kick on a little bit, or it turns into a roll over and die sort of attitude. Which has been us for large spells of the season. We might just be hitting a little bit of a corner at the right time in terms of those last two games. I know that sounds mental when one of them is a loss, but just that spirit and togetherness within the squad. Plymouth at home is a huge game as well. I personally think at home that's a winnable game. And I would stick my neck out now without obviously knowing kind of like team news and player availability and all the rest of it. I would think that that's a team that we will beat at home, just based off nothing other than the fact of I think they're a worse side than they were last year.
Yeah, and they've kind of they were riding that crest of a wave, I suppose, and I think that's kind of fell off somewhat, and they've realised that it's a lot tougher than what they first thought. For me, I think I want to say that we can do it. I feel like these three worst teams in Sheffield Wednesday this season, And I feel like we could start getting a little bit of momentum in terms of the fans. You know, I feel like it's that siege mentality at the moment as well, in terms of, you know, everyone, we're just on that cusp of feeling like it's all done and finished and over. But we just seem to keep getting them wins and just giving us that little bit of hope every time. And, you know, I think Saturday's game against Bristol City at home, I think, like I said, it is, again, they're mid-table, they're... You know, they're probably thinking they're not going to get playoffs, they're not going to get relegated. I know it's still a lot of football left, but being realistic. But they'll also think they can beat us, but not going to put 110% effort in. And I feel like, yeah, we can probably get us over the line. And I think what everyone else has been saying is probably right. Let's see where we are after these next three games, because we have got tough games coming up after that. And if we've got some points in the bank, then, you know, who knows what's going to happen in that, you know, the... in that final running. I hope we can do it, like everyone else. I've not kind of resigned myself to thinking that we're going to get relegated at the moment, although I'm very, very close at times. You know, 4-0 Huddersfield, I was nearly there. Like, I was very, very nearly in that place. I mean, the Millwall fans, they did turn, didn't they, yesterday?
Yeah, 100%.
You was there, I was watching it. You know, Rob Staton commented a few times on them, and you could audibly hear the boos ring out, and I was thinking, Jesus, like, you know, especially when that second goal went in, it didn't sound like a fantastic place to be as a Millwall fan, I have to admit.
No, I think that is the epitome of a ground where if you are the home team and it's going well for you, I can't think of many more places that you'd want to play football as a professional footballer. Because if that is a relatively full ground and they are right behind you, and not only the fans are right behind you, you also know that they are going right after an away team and away fans who are there, it must fill you and breed absolute confidence amongst them. And that was obviously proven past couple of years when they've been on a good run under people like Rower and been either safely in mid-table or sort of challenging, kind of flirting with the playoffs. It must be a really nice place.
I think the ground does that. Yeah. It's very intimidating that, like, because it's two tiers, but not very deep. It feels like the fans are like right on top of the pitch, if you know what I mean. So I can imagine, if it is going right, that it can be a very intimidating place.
It was the exact opposite of that yesterday, both from an away fan's perspective and also from, I would assume, from a player's perspective. There was not much. The first 20 minutes, I think, was very, very cagey up until obviously we scored. Millwall fans made, I would argue, a token gesture for about 5 to 10 minutes of trying to get one or two little bits and pieces started. And then you could hear, similar to what we've heard at Hillsborough over the course of this season at different times, you could hear those moans and groans when there's a misplaced pass goes here, or something doesn't quite go right there, or somebody runs it out of play, or they don't get a decision. And you could almost feel being on that knife edge, which, again, just from how poor a run that they've been on, I mean, they are in absolute free fall at the minute, Millwall. And it was, from away fans' perspective, from a Sheff Wednesday perspective, it was brilliant to see that be capitalised on in the space of that first half.
Yeah, I mean, Millwall, like us, I think they, when they go a goal down, I mean, I don't want to say turned a corner, because we've only won one and drawn two, I think it is. They've only drawn three games when they've gone behind. So they've come back three times. They've not come back to win. So when I was talking to the Millwall lad before the game, on the preview show, he was saying the first goal is crucial. The second goal is probably even more crucial than the first, because he's like, if you go 2-0 up, that is it. We are not coming back from two goals down. We don't even come back from one goal down, but to come back from two is like pretty much game over. And he was saying, like, if we can get back to 1-1, if we do score first, then it could be game on, and something we've not seen very much before. But we obviously got those vital two goals. Let's talk about the first half then. I thought, up until the point of the goal, you've kind of touched on it a little bit. I thought it was two sides that kind of lacked real quality. It looked a game for me, obviously I wasn't there, but it looked like the game were being played at 110 miles an hour at times, and neither side could really get a stranglehold of the game. I think up until the goal, that was our first chance on target, and I think Millwall had only had, I want to say, one or maybe two at that point. And we were, first goal came half an hour into the game. What did it feel like being there? Was it one of those where you're thinking, Christ, like it felt like it could go either way really quickly?
Cagey is exactly how it felt. Really, really cagey. And again, that might just be from my perspective and nervous. It was two teams who were... didn't particularly want to make too much of a mistake, so were not really throwing themselves going forward, weren't really overcommitting themselves, therefore leaving them sort of selves exposed at the back at all. I suppose their best couple of chances before obviously we scored were deliveries into the box. There was one free kick which missed everybody. Thankfully, there was somebody who was blown up for offside. That kind of went straight through and went out behind the post. There was another one that was whipped in, which I think Beadle palmed out. Aside from that, I'll be honest, it was a 10 players versus 10 players just running around trying to kick lumps out of one another and make sure that nothing dangerous happened. And tomorrow, a classic Steve Bracknell phrase, when it goes, it goes. Yeah. It was, any 50-50 challenge was two players who were not going to back out of it. Ball bobbles around, somebody puts it into a stand, let's get back and sit and reset.
Yeah, you mentioned that. I can't remember, it was in the first minute or so, put a crunching tackle on Volks, and then I think he kind of followed that up 5 or 10 minutes later with a big tackler, of his own. On about tackles, I mean, their kid, he should be in the Six Nations with that rugby tackle on Johnson. Christ almighty, I've not seen anything like it.
Well, that was really interesting because I thought that was one of the first times that we actually sort of broke out of a bit of shape and actually had a bit of a run going forward. And it's to be credit to him, Marvin Johnson, it's a great bit of skill to turn back inside to kind of like chop rather than just going down the line. And but again, if you're in that position, that's exactly what you want. And it's one of the things that I've been really critical of us over the course of this season. We've not had that sort of nasty, for lack of a better word, shithouse side of our game, where actually I thought we were brilliant at that yesterday, especially in the second half, like slowing the game down, taking those necessary fouls. Ashley Fletcher aside, we'll come to that, obviously. But taking those really necessary fouls and just slowing everything down. And again, when he cut inside Johnson, he did have options coming up alongside him. And it was 100% the right decision from their player to absolutely just throw him to the floor. Don't matter what way he's going down, he's not getting past me.
I was about to say the same. He nearly got him round the neck. You'd have been sin-binned on the rugby pitch for that. Do you know what I mean?
It's a blue card. That's what that is. It's a blue card.
We've had all that last week. We're not talking about blue cards this week. But yeah, that was cynical and just, I didn't understand what I was seeing at the time. I thought, I did think, it could be a red, because that was a bit reckless, but I think yellow's probably the right. George Honeyman, it was that made that rugby tackle. It's funny because Rob on the commentary said that you often say, "Oh, that's like a rugby tackle," that, but not often does it actually look like a rugby tackle. But this one was. Like you mentioned, their chance, and then we score on 31 minutes, just a couple of minutes after that rugby tackle incident. Masaba picks the ball up on the halfway line, nutmegs Leonard, and then he's off. Two touches he takes from the halfway line to get into the box, which I want to see him do that. He's that quick that he doesn't need to take 55 touches to get to the edge of the box. He can just kick it a few times and run because, there's not many players that are going to catch up with Anthony Masaba. He gets to the edge of the box. And then I'm sure you've watched it back and you might have seen it at the time, but the movement from both Poveda and Ugbo is absolutely fantastic. Sometimes I don't take much notice of the stuff that happens off the ball. You just see the goal scorer, but we saw Kadamatri for Ugbo's first goal where Poveda pulled it back against Birmingham, where it's the player off the ball that kind of makes that movement and drags the defenders with him. And that's exactly what Poveda did this time. He darts that front post. And all the defenders have to shift across. One's got to go to Masaba because he's left his man for dead. And then someone's got to go to Poveda. And then that just leaves, I think it's actually the left wing back that's marking Ugbo. And he's the wrong side of him. He's not goal side. And then that means that ball can come across. And like we alluded to earlier when we talk about Ugbo, he's in that place where he needs to be to put the ball in the back of the net. He's not going to miss. He bundles the ball over the line and it's 1-0 and I'm sure it was pandemonium in that away end.
Yeah, I think you've summed it up perfectly there. I think the little move from Masaba to almost like shape his right wing back as if he's going outside to then drop into that little pocket of space just frees up that 5 yards for him. And he does something that I suppose I myself have been critical of him over the past couple of weeks. He actually squares his man up and then goes straight past him, which over the past couple of weeks I've felt that when he has come on, he's looked less likely to go round people than he did in the first couple of weeks with us, and especially at that kind of like form around Christmas where he was really dangerous. He actually squares his man up. I mean, it's a beautiful little nutmeg, and then he's off and flying. I agree with you. The movement from Provader is absolutely brilliant. I think the little double move from Ugbo as well on the edge of the area, he also darts to go front post. Cooper, I think it's Cooper who's their centre half, he's kind of caught between two minds because he's got a man going there anyway, has to go there, creates that space. It's a fantastic ball in. I've been really critical in, I suppose, Tuesday night, particularly about deliveries into the box and just saying that we needed to put the ball in the box, but also recognising the fact that we just didn't have options on Tuesday night. there was two options in the box for the delivery today. Yeah.
The other thing as well, they were both busting a gut to get there, which I've not seen much this season. You know, it's a bit laboured and what have you, which maybe it is something they've been working on in the, you know, maybe before the ball is going to be chopped back to the edge of the box or something like that, whereas if he's going there to the back post, that's where the ball's going. And people spoke about that relationship between Ugbo and Masaba. I think they were a Belgium side a couple of years, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, and they, you know, they linked up quite well, and Ugbo scored quite a few goals there. So maybe this is the start of this little relationship going. And I do agree with Masaba as well. I think when you said about him, you know, taking his man on and things, he has been coming off the bench, and let's remember this is half an hour into the game. He's not been getting half an hour. In some instances, it has been, you know, 20 minutes or so. So maybe he's one of those players that needs to kind of grow into the game, and he needs to start. But I do agree. I think it was the right call, because he has been, he was great at the start of the season. He got a few goals. All right, I mean, that's the start of the season. Start of the Danny Rule era.
Yeah, I mean, let's call it the proper start of the season, October-ish all the time, yeah.
Yeah, when we start actually playing a bit of football. he did quite well. And then he did drop off a little bit, but it felt like Gassama then filled that void. Yeah. And I kind of talk about those two players as the one player. I feel like they are very, very similar. Yeah. I think they complement each other quite well. But it just feels like when one drops off, the other one can come in and replace him. And I felt that Masaba did that yesterday.
Yeah, I'll be honest, up until that assist for that first goal, I did think it was going to be a tough game for him, because he was not, from my perspective anyway, he was not in the game at all, Anthony Masaba. He was really struggling to get into it. And it did look like, I can understand why he's been playing, because I think we did surrender a lot of the ball to Millwall and say, okay, you try and beat us then, and actually give them the opportunity. Whereas past couple of seasons, it's always felt with Millwall, when it's another side who dictates possession, they do exactly that to you, is they break on you, they get a delivery into the box and somebody taps it in, and you come away scratching your head thinking, how have they won that? Whereas we seem to do a little bit of that yesterday, but when we did have the ball, especially in that first half, second half was much more game management, but the first half, it was breaking, as you say, with real intent and actually trying to get players up and around, because I think players recognised it, and I mean, we definitely did in sort of the stands and from a fan's perspective. It was going to be a game of fine margins yesterday. Yeah. As it turned out, a 2-0 win, you won't see many more comfortable 2-0 wins away from home. But it was when you have got that opportunity, you need to get in there and support. And it was a great delivery, great finish, as you say. Away in goes, you know, absolutely ballistic. You could see home fans getting very, very immediately turned. And it was really noticeable. I mean, they were only 1-0 down to what, second bottom in the league, and you could audibly hear boos ringing. You know, you could see people throwing their hands up and getting really very, very frustrated but particularly around sort of like where the two benches are behind their sort of like management team and their coaching staff. And it was in the stands, it was definitely I turned around to my dad earlier the games with, and I just said, these are gone here. If you can get another one in the next 10-15 minutes, these will turn.
Well, that exactly happened, didn't it? We didn't have to wait long, 10 minutes, I think it were, until we got that second goal. I mean, some excellent close passing in our own half. I think it's Bannon, Volks, I think a couple of others are involved in that as well. And then Bannon kind of waits and waits and waits and then plays an excellent through ball. And, you know, Masaba, again, is gone. And for me, the thing that he's not showed a great deal of this season is that composure. Now, I don't know if I've mentioned him, but I keep saying speedboat, no driver about Masaba quite a lot of times. That end product, even though he's, you know, he had four goals before today, so he has got some sort of end product, but you do find he's sometimes a little bit wasteful, which I accept. We're in, you know, we're at the bottom of the Championship. We're not top of the Premier League, so he's not that finished article. But again, you know, a couple of touches. And then I think the goalkeeper could do a little bit better, if I'm being perfectly honest. But I'm not taking anything away from Masaba, because he's got it on target. He's done what he needs to do. He's got the shot off, and it just nestles in that bottom corner. And I think I tweeted saying we're in dreamland, because that's how it felt like. You know, it was, you get one, and then it wasn't immediately after, but, you know, just before halftime, absolute sucker punch to be 2-0 up. And it was a bit like, wow, 2-0 up. Like, this doesn't normally happen, especially away from home.
No, I think it was also really interesting from sort of like the conversations that people have been having over the course of the week and I suppose over the course of the season about this argument of goal kicks and playing it out from the back. The goal initially comes from our goal kick in terms of Beadle lays it out wide and it goes, I think it's to Liam Palmer, and he doesn't see an option on. He doesn't see fit to go back. So he actually goes length of the pitch, but we have two forwards, definitely Ogbo presses it. I can't remember any of the other players. It might be Pervader. I might be doing it a disservice there. Who charge down your keeper, forcing him to not be able to control the ball or pass it out and lay it out and just kind of recycle possession. He has to go long with it. We then win the ball in the breakdown from Bernard, who wins the header. And then, yeah, as you say, some fantastic interplay with that centre midfield little triangles and we pop it about. Again, that little outside to win run from Asaba is brilliant. I think the ball from Bannon, I think we've all become a little bit desensitised to watching Barry Bannon play balls like that. But I mean, it's a great run. It's perfectly weighted. It's exactly into stride. He has nothing other than to take a shot. He can shoot. He could square it. The ball that is played to him, again, I know it's just a straight pass, but it's a straight pass that is executed to absolute perfection.
Yeah, how many times do you see them go straight through to the goalkeeper or get cut out by a defender? He waited for the exact moment to pass it. And yeah, like you said, I think you're perfectly right. Like I think we do take Barry Bannon for granted, myself included. I'll hold my hands up on that one. He's played for us for that long that you just expect those things sometimes. And when, or should I say, you know, when that doesn't happen, you think, fucking hell, he's crap him. But, you know, he comes up with the goods more often than not. And I think we do need to just appreciate. But, you know, if you don't already, I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that do 100% appreciate Barry Bannon. But those that don't, I think we need to just kind of, you know, be thankful that we have got Barry Bannon in the ranks.
Yeah, I think any single Sheffield Wednesday fan now would rather have him in their side than not. And that tells you everything you need to know about the player. Is would you rather have him playing for you in this relegation scrap or would you rather have him playing against you? We don't have many players. So we've been screaming out for players all year. Or we haven't got anybody who can unlock a defence or who can play that one particular pass or anything like that. That is exactly the type of moment that we've been crying out for in arguably our biggest game of the season so far. An absolute must win away from home. It's your captain, your player who's been there for a number of years. I don't want this to turn into a Barry Bannon loving fest, but it's him who cuts a slide rule pass straight through. Job done.
Yeah,
it's as simple as that. And you go 2-0 up away from home at a side who immediately, it was really interesting, boos ring out again, but you watch a lot of the home fans empty, all clearly desperate to get down for a half-time pie and a pint like before this gets any worse, because I was expecting a reaction straight after that second goal went in. There was nothing. And it was very much like they were.
They didn't know what day it was. You know, they were. I think I tweeted as well saying half time's coming up. I don't want it to be half time. I'm sure Millwall desperately did, and the players probably just wanted to get in and kind of regroup a little bit because they were at sixes and sevens. There were boos ringing out. It didn't feel nice, and they hid. I felt like the Millwall players, and you know, we took advantage, didn't we? You know, we got that, obviously got the second goal and everything, and half time probably did come at the wrong time. I mentioned about hiding. I think the Millwall Twitter admin hid as well, because their tweets went a little bit something like this. I think it said goal for the visitors, and then it was Wednesday 2-0, and then the next one is a half time graphic, and the next one is a full time graphic, nothing in the second half. And that is their last tweet that they've posted. They've posted nothing since then. I don't know if that's a bit ominous. I mean, maybe the Twitter guys got sacked, but I don't know if about the, you know, if the manager's going to get the chop as well, which would be kind of ironic because his first game in charge was against us, beating us 4-0, and it might be that his last game in charge is against Sheffield Wednesday as well. So, we'll have to wait on that one.
I mean, that little Twitter sort of like thread there, sorry, X thread there, sums it up perfectly of their afternoon at Millwall yesterday. And that's not me trying to do a disservice to him or talk down to him. That was their afternoon in a nutshell. Kickoff, goal, half-time, full-time. Because, I mean, for a side who desperately need a result at, you know, supposedly one of the most intimidating grounds in sort of the English pyramid for away fans and away teams, not just that first half. I thought it was huffed and puffed second half, but they didn't really do anything either in the second half. And it became a almost what you would say from an away perspective, a perfect away performance from, I mean, you couldn't have asked for more as a as an away side going in at halftime 2-0 up. You basically just have to say, I think what kind of Danny Roll will have done, which was keep it tight. Again, if the opportunities present themselves, these lot will come out the first 15 minutes. I'm sure it'll be a lot more technical than what I'm this bollocks that I'm spouting. But, you know, that first 15 minutes, you've got to weather that storm because they will, you know, they will try and come at you and try and get a goal. But after that, we'll then start ringing a few changes and start, you know, protecting what we've got, which is sort of exactly how it turned out, really.
It's funny, you mentioned about, you know, I'm sure it's more technical than that. I don't know if you saw the picture that Wednesday tweeted of the dressing room at Millwall. They played, I think they played Ipswich, didn't they, in midweek? Whoever played at the Den.
Yeah, the last 4-0.
Yeah. So on the, there's a whiteboard, and on the whiteboard it says, you can see it's been rubbed out, but you can quite visibly see it just says, pass the ball. And I mean, like, do you know what I mean?
That is...
Professional footballers here, which passed the ball.
It's fine, it's that.
I mean, it was. I think clinical was another word that was on there. I can't remember what the other words were, but you could visibly see pass the ball. I'm thinking, Christ Almighty, like, yeah. Maybe Masaba and Kasama need to times perhaps listen to that sort of advice.
It really did look like it was a side Millwall yesterday where their manager has told them to either go back to the principles of what he wants. I know we're big on speaking about Danny Roll's principles, on either the principles of what he wants or what you would call basics. Go back to basics, win your personal battles, make sure you don't do anything stupid and give yourself an opportunity to still be in the game, you know, with half an hour to go. Because you're right. I mean, they lost 4-0 to Ipswich in midweek. And by all accounts, I mean, I've seen bits and pieces from it. Ipswich didn't have to work particularly hard to score four against them. So I suppose that is the absolute minimum that you would be asking for from a Millwall perspective is doing those basics. Because I mean that side that started for them yesterday, you don't look at it with much kind of, I suppose as an away fan, I didn't look at it and think, oh, he's going to be a handful today. Yeah. I looked across it and thought that is much of a muchness if I even know half of the players anyway.
Yeah, exactly. I felt the second half we just did what was needed. We weren't, you know, we weren't going to get the third goal. I think we knew that, you know, a 2-goal lead and the way that they were, it was a manageable lead. And the thing is, like, I mean, look, it didn't feel this way in the second half, certainly watching it. I wasn't cool, calm and collected. I was an absolute nervous wreck. And, you know, I think even if we were 4-0 up, it doesn't matter who we're against, I'd still not be, you know, until that final whistle goes, I'm still not super confident, you know. Ever since Stoke on Boxing Day, where we were 1-0 up going into the 90th minute, I have nightmares about that game.
One of the worst away days I've ever been to. That was horrible.
That was, yeah, even I still think, like, you know, it is a bit cagey. 2-goal lead, you know. I mean, once it gets to 90 minutes, I think, all right, we're just there. But, you know, I just felt like we just did what was needed. And you mentioned earlier about being like we're not that nasty team or that kind of time waste and stuff. But the game management, I felt in the second half, were just to a T.
Brilliant. Yeah. And I think that.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Three for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. Beyond the pitch, beyond the results, we're here to connect fans, getting them to embrace the highs and lows of supporting your club. Because we're not just fans, we're a team. With 2 in 3 football fans having struggled with their mental health, we understand that life off the pitch can present its own challenges. That's why we're committed to ensuring you have the tools to stay connected with your friends and fellow supporters. Take a moment to connect with your mates. A simple text or an open conversation can make a world of difference. And if they don't respond right away, don't hesitate to follow up. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
comes from your team selection. You know, the team that started, I think we kind of set the tone for that type of thing in the first half. One of the things that really irritated me Boxing Day away at Coventry was Callum Patterson obviously went down injured, concussed, knocked out. We brought him off the pitch with no ready replacement and decided to play the next 5 minutes without a player. Lo and behold, inside that first 5 minutes, ball goes down the side where Callum Patterson's supposed to be, player out of position in the centre of the park, and they score. Yesterday, there was absolutely none of that. And this comes down to players like your Will Volks, your Michael Ahekwa, your Liam Palmer, your Marvin Johnson, your Barry Bannon, basically just calming everybody down and just saying, oh, no, if you're not right, stay down. Even if you don't bring a trainer on, stay down for a minute and a half.
Just on that, Poveda, he goes down, he's holding his hammy. Like, I thought he were done. That is the best hamstring recovery I have ever seen by a player in my entire life, because you see it and he kind of, I think he's a bit of an innocuous challenge. I don't think it is really a challenge, or it might be, he kind of carries on, then he's on the floor and he's holding his hamstring. And when a player does that, you know, if they hold the ankle, you think, all right, he's been kicked or something like that. But when they're holding your hamstring or something, you think, oh Christ, that is, he's done. And I thought, I think it was 0-0 at this point as well. And then he gets up and, you know, walks over and gives Danny Rill a bit of a hug. And he's back on again. At that point, I'm thinking, mate, if you've felt a twinge in your hamstring, like, you know, like we were talking about earlier with Cadamartri and things, we need him, because I think he's a fantastic player. And I were like, just get off, like, get subbed off, bring someone else in, you know, and we'll regroup on, you know, on Saturday against Bristol City, and hopefully you're all right. But yeah, he finished the game and, you know, influential in that first goal as well. So I've no idea what happened there.
He is not only technically a really good footballer, I think he has also got that kind of little bit of a nasty side to him, which is really brilliant to see. We don't really get many of those type of players historically anyway down at Wednesday. It doesn't feel like. And I know there's been a lot of Forestieri comparisons and to him, and I wouldn't start talking about that yet because we've seen a handful of games from him. But he feels a similar type of player, not just in terms of like he can beat a player and he can pick an eye for a pass and all the rest of it. And there's a bit of like it gets you off your seat. There was also a little element with Forestieri that was a little bit nasty.
Yeah.
That was really nice to see. I think he chucked up on his Instagram yesterday, Poveda, him just sat on the wall, and there's a couple of fans behind who are losing their marbles about it. And I'm just thinking, the caption of it is something like, it's easy to tame lions or something like that. Yeah. And I'm thinking, like, I know this is really petty, but that type of shit does mean a lot to fans. And it does kind of like get you roped in, and you do think, oh, I quite like that.
Yeah, it's one of them where, you know, you love it when it's, you know, your player, but if, you know, if that was the other way around and Millwall had said something about, oh, you think, you bastard, do you know what I mean? Like, you hate it, don't you? So it does get under your skin a little bit. And I think you're right. He has got that bit of nastiness in him. And I think sometimes you need a balance, don't you, in the squad. You can't have 11 like that, because it don't quite work. You know, but
it ain't going to work.
But he has got that bit of flamboyance as well, I find, that he can, you know, there were times, I hark back to the Birmingham game where, you know, he was kind of almost running the show at times, and, you know, had some of their defenders on toast, you know, in terms of, you know, the little bits of skill that he were doing and things like that. And we saw that again yesterday. So, yeah, but yeah, I'm glad that his hamstring is all right. And like I said, I have no idea what it was.
Yeah, he seemed to come off with, he seemed to pull up with what looked like cramp just before he come off, because he come off in the same incident that Bannon got crocked in as well, which was that sort of like a bouncing loose ball 50-50 challenge. Both of them fly into it. Bannon gets a knock to his knee and he pulls up just before. It was as we were breaking in terms of like a changeover of the ball. He picks the ball up and everybody's screaming, go on. And then Michael Smith runs past him, which is a red flag to begin with, because if he's beating you for base, you've got a fucking problem. And he takes the ball off him, but actually there's a zoomed in photo on the, there's like a zoomed in clip on the highlights that Wednesday posted just before we recorded this, where you can see him visibly pull up and grab at his hamstring, and it just looks like cramp. It doesn't look anything more than that. But you're right, if he has kind of like got that side to him where he will take a minute and a half off a clock, and he will go down perhaps and just kind of like reset everything and get everything a bit more quiet. That is a really nice balance to have, even with a flair player, because again, it's just rare that you don't really see that type of thing with them.
Yeah, I mean, Millwall had one chance in the second half. Bernard blocked it off the line, and I felt like, and I mentioned that we're not home and hosed and until that final whistle for me, but that point where you're thinking they're not going to score here. Like, you know, anything that they try is they're not going to get a goal. And you know, when Bernard cleared that one off the line, I felt exactly like that. And you know, they had a chance later on with Diaby as well, didn't they?
Yeah, I think the first one, which is Bernard clears it off the line, I think it's Watmore does really well actually to cut inside and get a shot off. For me, chooses the wrong option, because it's almost a carbon copy of what we scored from in the first half, where if he just takes that extra touch and whips it across the edge of the area, he's got centre-halves all running back on their own goal, and there's actually a lad who is free in the middle. I think it might be Bradshaw who's free in the middle for a tap-in if the ball's good. And he cuts back inside and actually gives defenders that opportunity to get back on the line. It's a great clearance off the line, because I don't think Beadle's getting there. I think he's just out of his reach. There's another one which I think a Equa throws himself in the way of, which is a one or two of the nice little interchanges of play that Millwall did put together. I think it's Romain Essa who zips it through. There's a little ball down the channel. Equa gets in, blocks it straight over. That last one that you've just mentioned where they get in, where Marvin Johnson seems to run into the back of Deshaun Bernard and he falls over, and then they're cleaning down the right ball across the box, out of reach of Diaby. The lad who came on for them, for me, you'd be absolutely livid as a Millwall fan, because he doesn't throw himself at the ball. He just sort of jogs past it. It goes out. And then you are thinking, well, I think that was around the 86th minute or something, you are starting to think that might be home and hosed here. Because they really... difficult to say this, and I don't want to be disrespectful to them. They really didn't offer much in that second half. For considering that that was a game that surely you must be looking at as a home fan thinking, we need to win this. They didn't really offer anything. And I think, you know, that's not taking anything away from us. I think it was a complete away performance from us. It was really well managed, but they were a poor side yesterday, Millwall.
For me as well, a lot of fans you see on especially on X saying, we don't turn up for the big games though, you know, and things, which, to be fair, you know, when you're 23rd in the league, like there's a lot of games that we have not turned up for, to be honest, yeah. if you want to say that. But you look at it, Birmingham, we've turned up, beat them 2-0. Millwall, another six-pointer. Again, we've turned up, beat them 2-0. Leicester, we all know we're going to be tough. Fair enough. That was just a blip. But we mentioned this season quite a lot. You know, I've mentioned quite a few times, you know, you don't, especially like the Southampton game, the season's not defined by Southampton away. It's also not defined by Leicester away, as much as the games come in quite a pivotal time and everything. But, you know, everyone expects a defeat there. We've got some games coming up which they need to turn up for, and I'm just glad that we've been picking up a few points so that we're going into them games and they're still massive games, but there's not as much pressure in terms of like, oh my God, we're six games without a win. Where's the next win going to come from? You know what I mean? You're going to look back last week and we've won, you know what I mean? In terms of played Millwall and we've won. One other thing happened in this game, which I don't know about you, but I'm one of them that I often look on flash scores or insert your score provider here, whichever one it may be. But I'm one of them that, you know, I look at some games, I click on a few, and I always kind of picture in my mind like what's happened. And this is one of them games where you look and you go, red card. So I always click on the, you know, team that's won that's got a red card. It draws me attention. So you'd be clicking on this one and you look and you go, red card, 91st. Wait a minute, yellow in the 91st, another yellow in the 91st. It came on 10 minutes before as well. What the fuck's happened here? Like, you know what I mean? It's one of them that you would be like thinking, I've got to find these highlights for this game and see exactly what happened to, you know, to why he got that second yellow. But yeah, Christ almighty.
I know there's been a lot of defence of Ashley Fletcher and he's very try-hard and all the rest of it. And this isn't a knock on him personally, but as a footballer, let's call a spade, he's a striker who's played, what, over 20 games for us?
Yeah.
Not scored. And yesterday was his Sheffield Wednesday career summed up in a nutshell.
Do you know what?
Come on.
I've seen someone post that meme, the Simpsons one, you know, where Grandad walks. That is him. I mean, there's early baths and then there's, you know, I mean, he'd not even worked up a sweat and he's thinking, I'm done. I'm gonna get on that coach first.
Honest to God, James, he looked like he'd been told to either go up into a front two or sort of work in a wider area to Smith and kind of like run the channels, which, fair enough, I'd rather have him doing that than Michael Smith. Ball goes out for a throw-in. Now, this is where I will give him a bit of a pass. There is a ball on a cone next to where the ball goes out for the lad from Millwall, who runs over, sprints over and picks it up. He boots the ball that he's just kicked out down the touchline and gets a yellow card for. So that I will give him a bit of a pass for, because it does seem a bit of a... Okay, you could argue he's just getting rid of the ball. He's still fucking stupid, but you could argue he's still getting rid of the ball. The second one is absolutely fucking criminal. Absolutely criminal. When you've just been booked, not what, a minute and 10 seconds, whatever it was. So the loose pass is, the breakdown comes, ball comes to him. All you need to do, and all anybody was screaming at him to do, is just, you keep running to the corner, you keep running to the byline, you just wait for a clip, go down, completely relieve the pressure. The worst bit about that pass is he even appeared to look before he played the ball.
It's like, what team was it now that passed to the steward? Was that Man City? It's almost like that.
It was at Peterborough, that.
Was it? Yeah. It was almost like that. He looked up and then just, there you go, have it, and passed it straight to him. Like, what are you doing?
He loses the ball and then, do you know what? If he'd have gone in and absolutely snapped the kid in half and got off for a second yellow, I'd have walked away and gone, okay, you've clearly lost your head that you've just given the ball away in a really important one. It's pathetic. He chases after him, doesn't try and get in front of him, doesn't try and shoulder barge him off the ball, does sort of some absolute criminal sort of stands on the back of his Achilles or the back of his boot, goes down and immediately knows what's happening because he turns around and starts walking to the touchline. It is... I mean, I'm not saying he should never play for us again, because I don't think it's because he doesn't care or anything like that, or he's not tried for us. I don't think he should play for us again for the simple fact of he's quite simply not good enough.
Yeah.
He's fine to bring on for 5 minutes at the end of a game.
Well, he's clearly not, because he gets his sin sent off.
Correct.
I think you're right, though. I think quite a lot of us gave him the benefit of the doubt. We're just, you know, things changed when he came on. I think that's more down to the fact that the time that he came on in most games, you know, things do actually change in those scenarios. And most games were kind of in the balance at that point. But yeah, you know, he has had a few chances. His tally should be at least three by now. And if it was three, you could argue that he would probably get more opportunities and potentially score more goals than that. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, Ike Ugbo's played, what, five or six games, scored three goals, playing in the exact same position as him, and arguably not as many opportunities. All right, he started a few more games, but he's taken that opportunity and shown what you can do when you get given a chance. And Fletcher, I know he's come off the bench for most of those games that he's played, but yeah, the fact that a player comes in and already starts ahead of you, you know, just, and he's now scoring, just shows where Fletcher really is in that pecking order.
Yeah, nicest will in the world. I mean, if you are sat in his position, you cannot argue that you've not had your opportunities, that you've not had your chances to score. Yeah, I think in some of them he's been unlucky. I think he probably should have scored. The fact of the matter is he hasn't. We've been saying all season, up until what we've had Ike Ugbo come in, Cadamatri for a little spell as well, we've been saying one of our biggest issues this year is keeping the ball out of the net and scoring goals. His sole job for us is to score goals. I know he will have other instructions, but ultimately as a striker, you are, and rightfully so, should be judged on your goals. He has simply not done enough for us, for the club. I'm sure, you know, outside of it, I'm sure he trains well. I'm sure he does listen and carry out instructions for role. But when those chances fall, I do not want them falling to him. I would much rather fall to and any number of other players before it drops to him, because I just have zero confidence in him to be able to put them away. And that yesterday was stupidity of the highest order, because ultimately if they go from that free kick and score with what, 3-4 minutes left to go, they are chucking everything there at you, and you are then defending and fighting for your lives. Now, I mean, on the way the game went yesterday, that was never going to happen. The point is, in a relegation battle, those are the fine little moments that cost you teams. We got away with it yesterday. We might not have got away with it on another day.
Yeah, exactly. And I agree on that one. You know, in the whole game, it didn't really matter, because, you know, it's happened late on, but that could have happened, you know, 10 minutes before. We might have been 1-0 up. You could argue that you don't do it if we're 1-0 up and everything else, but yeah, it's just stupid, really. I'm going to test your knowledge here. We have actually got the most red cards of any team this season. Four red cards we've had. I think the next highest is 2. I think we're also at the top for most penalties that we've given away as well. And also
bottom of ones that we've received.
Yep, 0. I think us and Rotherham have not had a penalty, but and we've given away 6, I think it is, which is in comparison, Leicester have had 11, or they certainly had before we played them, and I don't know if they got a penalty at the weekend or not. Go on then. Can you name all 4? Obviously, we've got one as a given, which is Fletcher.
Ashley Fletcher. I want to say George Byers pressed them.
Yep.
Next one is 100% a shot in the dark. It's more just because of how much of a car crash he can be. Bambo Diaby?
Yep. Can you remember what game it was?
Not a clue.
Coventry. Right at the end.
Oh, way. Right, Neil, I'll be honest, I'd left. The second one went in, I was gone.
And the other one?
Is it?
It's away from home, I'll give you that.
It's not well, Volks. Is it?
People are going to be screaming at the radio at this point.
Shot in the dark, Barry Bannon.
It was, yeah. Barry Bannon.
Hey, come on.
Barry Bannon, Bristol City. Remember when he took him down on the edge of the box? We lost that game 1-0, didn't we? And I felt like we could have won that game with 11 men as well.
There's another, we were just speaking about it, and there's another prime Ashley Fletcher miss last minute of the game.
Yep, 100%. So yeah, we've had 4 red cards, Bannon, Bambo, Byers and Fletcher, all the way from home as well. So,
jeez.
Mad. Right, let me read some of these 3-word match reviews out, and I want to talk about Paul Valentin as well, because we haven't talked about him in the pod, and I felt like he had a great game. Paul Pashley said, it's game on. Matt Glossop, it's still possible, with a little gif on there as well. Gareth Niblett, late Hull winner. Yeah, we're like, fucking hell, Huddersfield have equalised in the 90th minute, you jammy bastards. And then Hull, I check again and think, fucking hell, Hull have won. Now, has that happened? Yeah, they've conceded in the 96th minute. That was good. Andy, hope in sight. Neil Dunn said, clinical at last. Yeah, we didn't have many chances on target, but we certainly scored them. Neil Davey, massive 3 points. Matt said, professional away perfection. Hong Kong Owl said, to the playoffs. Incidentally, Leeds won. We can't now get automatic promotion, so we will have to settle for playoffs this season, unfortunately. So it might be another trip to Wembley come the end of it. Kelly said, what was needed? Yeah, agree with that one. Stephen Smith, the great escape. It is on, the great escape. Carl Snee, the Lions tamed. Daniel Hancock, we've already mentioned it. Quality game management. Richard Chadwick just put next 3 games. Yep, agree. They are vital next 3 games. I'll read one more out. George Elliott, he's gone with squeaky bum time. I don't think we're quite there yet. I think if there's 3 games left and, you know, it is hanging in the balance, then maybe. But I'm one of those where I'm still going into games now with, like, well, I'm going about to say 0 expectation, although I feel like that expectation is probably lifted a little bit given the win. I was very much like that in the Birmingham game. I was like, I really, you know, we could get beat today. The fact that we beat them, and then the fact that we beat Millwall, I feel like that expectation has perhaps come back a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's one of those where I'm not getting supremely nervous before games just yet, but whilst I'm at a game, I do feel like I'm having a bit of a heart attack.
Yeah, I agree. Right, but before we talk about Bristol City then, that's coming up on Saturday, we've already talked a bit about Masaba and Poveda. I wanted to talk a little bit about Paul Valentin, because one of those players that kind of gone under the radar a little bit. I think he's not quite been firing on all cylinders this season. I think he's certainly got pace to burn, which I think his wife starts, to be honest. I think that's the only reason why he starts, because some of his defending's a little bit abject at times. But I felt yesterday was probably his best performance that, you know, I'm about to say in a blue and white shirt. It's not, is it? It's that off-white shirt that we finally won in, by the way. Like, you know, we haven't worn it many times, but we have finally won a game, even if it has got that hideous white ironed on square on it. But yeah.
That logo's fucking disgusting, isn't it? That logo is horrible.
You know what? There's technology out there that means you can cut out the letters and just have it as like a... Just
cost money.
Well, yeah, true. You can make it a lot better than what it looks like. Is my answer. But yeah, Paul Valentin, I think it was best performance for Sheffield Wednesday today. I felt like he got forward a lot. I felt like he carried the ball as well, which, you know, sometimes you're like just wishing him to, you know, just go on, use your pace a little bit. And I felt like in some games he's just been trying to get his pass completion percentage up. He must be on some sort of bonus or something, because he's, you know, he goes for the easy pass every time, which, all right, granted, keep the ball, you know, don't take risks. I get that. But I do feel like when you've got an asset in terms of your pace, use it sometimes. But I felt he did that. And I mean, there were a few occasions where he got forward. But what's your kind of assessment being on Paul Valentin?
Yeah, I think he's grown into his role and responsibility at us. I think, admittedly, a very slow start for him. Again, you can't judge anything really off the previous manager who was here and any of the players who were there, and it was a completely fresh slate. I think when he come on, the game that he started against Middlesbrough was a real insight into what he can offer, because that night going forward, it was like, hang on, we've got somebody who's got genuine pace and likes going past people. What's happened here?
Yeah.
And then we've seen up and down performances from him. You do see him get beat defensively, more than I would like, but I would suggest that's probably also two things. One, the position that we are in as a football club and the position that we are in as a team. And secondly, he has, you know, very openly talked when he's given interviews about the differences and how difficult it has been to adapt to English football coming from where he has played his football previously. I think going forward, he's a real asset for us. I think defensively, there are still moments where he's found wanting. I think a back five helps that cover.
I was going to say exactly the same. He had Palmer behind him, didn't he? Which,
yeah.
If you know you've got someone behind you, which it does make it easier, doesn't it, to commit yourself 100%. Going forward, because you're not going to get back. But he has got that pace that he can help. And maybe the fact that, because he has been kind of the, I don't say last line of defence, but he has been the right back. If he makes a tackle or whatever, I don't know. I think he gets caught in a bit of two minds, and then, yeah, you're right, he does get beat quite often. I think, I don't want to disrespect him or anything, but I think he'd be fantastic in League One, because he's not coming up against a winger that's as good, and I think he'll probably be able to deal with it in, you know, defensively. But I think Danny Rill is quite happy to what he gives up in, you know, at the back. He takes in what he's got going forward in terms of that pace, and it is, football is a game of chess now. And if you look, and he's only going to beat you once, that you're going to think, if you're, you know, his opposite number, you're going to go, well, I can't leave him, you know, I can't get too touch tight to him, because if he turns and he's gone, then he's, you know, you're going to leave you short. So he's one of them where I think in the first 10 or 15 minutes, he's got to do that at least once in the game to, you know, to kind of give them something to think about, and, you know, he can grow into it. But I was certainly impressed with him. A bit like you, I've not really been impressed with him much all season, but, you know, that's, you know, maybe because of that is why he stood out a little bit for me yesterday.
Yeah, and I think also over the course of the season, it's really similar to when we all of a sudden discovered midway through last season that Reece James and Marvin Johnson could play on the same side together and there was a connection there. It might be the case of actually if you play him in that right wing back position and you do put Palmer as the right side of that back three, because he is more accustomedly and Palmer naturally to, you know, he's played everywhere for us, he will look at it and go, well, actually, you know, I've played a lot of my trade for Wednesday as a right back. I'm happy to sit and cover him. And it does allow him that freedom to go forward, to try and... There was an incident in the first half, I think it was, where the ball gets played across. I think it's an outside of the ball boot from Pervada, and it's sort of bobbling, and he is, you know, 30, 40 yards out from goal, and he flicks the ball up over their defender, and he's off and away from him. Good delivery into the box. Ugbo, I think, ball rolls through him, and you can see how visibly frustrated he is. That is what he does give you. I think one of the things that I've been most impressed with him is how much you always get the opinion when he comes off the pitch, even if you think, oh, he's been run rings around today. He comes off the pitch and you know that he has left everything out there. And I know that that is a minimum sort of expectation that you should be expecting from a professional footballer, but we've all seen plenty who don't. And I think that is one thing that we, as definitely as Sheffield Wednesday fans, we really do appreciate when a player is, you know, you can see a player is limited in terms of what they offer defensively, because I think technically he's a brilliant footballer, but I think defensively he does get caught. But I think whenever he leaves the pitch, you don't ever leave thinking he don't care, he doesn't want to be here. You do look at it and think he's clearly giving absolutely everything that he can. He's just come up against somebody who's either better than him today or has had the beating of him. Yesterday was, again, outstanding, I think, in times yesterday. I thought he played well, and I think that was his best performance in a Wednesday shirt yesterday, for sure.
Must be tough for him as well, because obviously he came to Wednesday because of Sisco. You know, I think I'm right in saying he either managed him or played with him. I want to say, I think he managed him. I think he played with Delgado, but...
It was Delgado, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Where the fuck is he?
Yeah, who is he? Where's Wally? But yeah, with Paul Valentin, he's come because of him. You know, he knows him, can probably, that's like someone who he can relate with. He's gone. He's in a different country. Do you know what I mean? He doesn't speak the language as well as he perhaps want to, although he's been, you know, he has been learning it and everything. And yeah, he's just had to knuckle down. And yeah, like I said, it must be tough. Put myself in them sort of shoes. You know what I mean? If you go over to Spain and you've got an English manager, you're thinking, oh, at least I can talk to him if I'm struggling. And then all of a sudden, They're all speaking Spanish. I would be struggling massively. I was mentioning this earlier, but when you look at the style of the passages of play that we've been doing, and a lot looks like it's very much come off the training ground. I don't know about you, but I'm just kicking myself in that I'm thinking Danny Rearle, if he'd have been given a pre-season, where could this team be? And now I know, obviously, the players that we've got now would probably be different. We wouldn't have your Masabas and your Gassamas. You know, Danny Rearle could have brought in totally different players. But you just look and think, the way that they're playing, I feel like some of these things, obviously, they've been working on in training are now starting to come off. Not necessarily just the passages of play, but where players need to be and that kind of in and out of possession, being in different shapes. I think there's been games under Danny Rearle where it's felt like someone's just been in the wrong position or not being where they should be, and then there's been a gap that's been exploited, and then we, you know, it looks like it's just a mistake that we've made, but you know, we might have just been out of position. Whereas I just feel like if we'd have had a pre-season and worked on this stuff in those 6 weeks, we could have been, well, we wouldn't be in this situation, put it that way.
No, I would agree with you. I don't think we would have gone absolutely storming up like our illustrious chairman thinks, and we should have been aiming for automatics and playoffs and all the rest of it. And I know this is without looking at, I'm trying to look at it without too much of a rose, you know, like a blue and white tinted spectacle sort of looking at it. I think we would be roughly around where Plymouth are now. Out of it and 8 points clear of a drop. Just because of the fact of there were, okay, we all spoke about it right at the start of the season that it was a really difficult start in terms of a run of fixtures, and we're all looking at it. I think it was going game 6 or 7 against Huddersfield, and we're all sat there going, that might be our first win. As it turned out, we went straight screaming past that and carried on. But I would have looked at it and I'd have thought, no, we would have taken a handful more points from where we are now. And even if it was just a handful more points, you know, two wins, a draw or something like that from it, we are sitting comfortably outside the relegation zone.
Yeah, exactly.
And it is, you know, longer, as you say, longer, different players to come in. I don't think we'd have been sadly watching Juan Delgado for the first six games of his Sheffield Wednesday career, which, to be fair, I don't want to do him too much of a disservice because he was clearly playing out of position. And for the first game, I thought he looked brilliant against
Southampton.
And then he looked all right at Hull when he scored. And then all of a sudden, it all just went absolutely left for him and just completely the opposite. But yeah, I do think we'd have played a very different style and a very different system. And I do think we'd have at least been coming away from, what was it, those first 10, 12 games going, do you know what, we've actually had a go. Which is, yeah. I know there was a lot of criticism about Leicester the other night, specifically the first half, less so the second, but definitely at Southampton. I would much rather see us go to teams and actually have a plan, whether that be sitting back and countering or whether it be, you know, going all out. And yes, you get naive and broke upon. Yeah, that's going to happen to us in this league because we are what we were doing two teams in League One last year. That is the level that we are at. If you look at our squad compared to others within the division, that is going to happen to you. I know that sounds horrendous to think it's only the Championship, but that does happen at this level, especially with the quality the two teams are at the top. So yeah, ifs and buts, but yeah, I would have thought we'd have been around mid-table.
Yeah, I have to agree, to be fair. Right, let's talk about the next game that's coming up then briefly before we finish and record extra time. Bristol City on Saturday. Liam Manning's their manager, formerly of MK Dons. Well, we'll know him from MK Dons, caught two seasons ago. He's since been at Oxford as well. They're currently sat 12th in the league, 7 points off the playoffs, 12 points off relegation, very much in that mid-table, kind of as mid-table as you could possibly get at this stage of the season. The form's not great. I mean, they have had two wins in the last three, but you know, no win in the previous six games before that. The wins came against Borough and Southampton, of all teams. I think beat Southampton and then lose to QPR, which is the most Wednesday thing. Well, yeah, exactly. It's something that we would do, that, to be fair. Yeah. You know, one win in the last four away from home. They have only had two wins away from home since early October as well. And obviously they're coming to Hillsborough on Saturday. Yeah, how do you feel Saturday's going to pan out? I feel like we've got to go into that game and take the confidence from last Saturday. And the other thing, there's no midweek game. We have got a full week of whatever the fuck Danny Rill wants to do between now and Saturday.
Yeah. I'm more confident that it's at home than I would have been if it was away from home. And I know I'm saying that off the back of our best away performance of the season, arguably. They are, as you say, they're not great away from home. And they are... Again, another side of you have no idea of what kind of Bristol City is ever going to turn up. You know, you go and beat Southampton, admittedly at home, but you go and beat Southampton, who I don't think anybody other than I saw one bloke had put it on as a bet before the game that they were going to win 2-0 against them and they were going to end that run. Nobody would have thought that. And then, as you say, they then go and lose to QPR following game. They are a real mixed bag.
I think Bristol are the new Stoke City.
Yeah.
I felt like Stoke was always the team that's just mid-table Championship and never anything else. Whereas, yeah. I'm just looking now, they've been in the Champ since 2015-16 and they've finished, where's their finishing position? 18th, 17th, 11th, 8th, 12th, 19th, 17th, 14th is their last run. And actually, to be fair, they've only spent two seasons outside of the Champ, going back right to 2007-08. So yeah, probably. And then 4th, 10th, 10th, 15th, and then 20th. But yeah, they do very much feel that team that's just always in the Championship, always mid-table, never anything else.
Have a bit of a push at playoffs every now and again at the start of a season and then gradually fades away and it never ends up being anything. I think I might be wrong. I think the week after that they play us, they've got Cardiff.
Right, okay.
Which for them, is a really big game. So all of
you
my
are right. wife's side, Ashton Gate as well, yeah.
Yeah, which is for them a really big game. I can't believe it's a derby, but for them it is a huge game and it is one of their biggest games of the season. Now, whether that plays into our hands or not, because they are playing for absolutely nothing, Bristol City is a completely different issue. Again, for me, it was the one which we highlighted in this sort of run of next four fixtures as a must not lose. I thought that we needed to take realistically from Millwall, this Rotherham, we needed to take 7 points as a necessity. Realistically, if you go and win this one, you can not lose then the following week at Rotherham, which would be nice. But again, unsure of what type of side that will turn up from Bristol City. I do believe we do 0-1 from the game down at Ashton Gate. That was toss of a coin match, really.
Yeah, we've not got anything to worry about, or nothing to fear, should I say. All right, I know they beat Southampton 3-1, and we're very good value for that 3-1 as well win, from what I can gather. But I don't think we can go thinking, oh Christ, it's Bristol City that are coming to Hillsborough. You know, we've got to be on a... It's not like Leicester or Southampton, put it that way. We're not going to... We can go toe-to-toe with them, and we can beat them, I think. I mean, Scott Twine... We do remember him. He scored on his debut. He's then since missed the next seven games. I don't know if he's going to be fit for Saturday, so that'll be a welcome miss, of course, if he's missed out. And the other one, Tommy Conway, is their leading goal scorer. He only scored six goals, so they seem to be, even though they're sat 12, must be suffering from the same thing as what we do, and not really got a striker that's scoring loads of goals. I'm just going to have a look at how many goals they've actually scored this season. 38 goals versus our 26. So one of the, when you look at around, there's not many teams in the 30s in terms of goals. So they haven't scored many away from home. Where are they? Let's have a look. Bristol City, can't even find them away from home. That's, where are they? They're in ninth. They've only scored 17 goals in 16 games away from home. So, again, struggling. But, Tommy Conway's got six. He's a 21-year-old that's come through their youth ranks. In terms of a score prediction then, Matt, for Saturday's game, what are you thinking? I know you've mentioned you'd take a draw. Is that what you're going to stick with?
I would take a draw, but I'm going for a 1-0 Wednesday win. I would take a draw just on the basis of, I think it's of those three games that I've just mentioned, I think it's the more difficult of the fixtures. I know Rotherham is a local derby, but as I said earlier on, for me, Rotherham are gone. And there is a massive quality difference between us and them in terms of the two sides. And I know they're better at home. I think we'll win 1-0.
Who's going to get the goal?
Let's have Jan Poveda to break his goal scoring drought so far of coming to Hillsborough. He's done everything but score, really.
What's his celebration? I can imagine him being, do you know what, in my head, I've got him doing some sort of like Robbie Keane like kind of front roll in a bit of a, you know, with his hands, you know, little guns with his hands or something like that.
I've got him run to the corner, get mobbed by everybody, then stand and walk across in front of the cop, giving it big all arms out, everybody coming slapping the back of his head, him pulling his socks up, pointing to the sky, all of that. As long as it wastes 3-4 minutes off the clock, I'm fine.
Yeah, well, hopefully we ain't got long to find out what his goal celebration is going to be. Could just look on YouTube, I guess, and just type in Jan Poveda goals, but we're not going to do that. We'll wait to do it. We'll wait to see what he does in front of the cop on Saturday. I'm going to go for, again, you've got to be Mr. Positive. It's going to be a win. I'm going to say 2-1 win. It'll be 2-0 and they'll get a late consolation. And first goal scorer, it's got to be Ugbo, hasn't it? He's got 3 and 5. Uh-huh. He's got 3 and 5 so far, or 3 in his last 3, if you look. So 3 and 3, he's going to make it 4 in 4. And we're going to beat him 2-1. Right, we're going to wrap things up there. Matt, massive thanks for coming on. I hope you've enjoyed it. It's been a good laugh, actually, to be fair.
Yeah, absolute pleasure. Cheers for having me on, James.
Yeah, no problem. We are going to be talking about away days and kind of what ingredients do you need to make a fantastic away day? And judging by what you've been talking about already, I'm guessing beers is going to be fairly high up on the pecking order, to be fair. So yeah, we're going to be talking about that on Extra Time. So head over to patreon.com/WTID pod if you want to hear about Matt's wacky away days that he's had following Sheffield Wednesday. But yeah, we're going to wrap things up. Massive thanks for joining us. Hope you've enjoyed it, and we'll see you again next time. Cheers, guys.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Three for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. Beyond the pitch, beyond the results, we're here to connect fans, getting them to embrace the highs and lows of supporting your club, because we're not just fans, we're a team. With 2 in 3 football fans having struggled with their mental health, we understand that life off the pitch can present its own challenges. That's why we're committed to ensuring you have the tools to stay connected with your friends and fellow supporters. Take a moment to connect with your mates. A simple text or an open conversation can make a world of difference. And if they don't respond right away, don't hesitate to follow up. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.